For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Today's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Bet Online. Your number one source for all the summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, to the NHL playoffs. Get all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow all of your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport there is. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Check out BetOnline, not only where the game starts, but a proud sponsor of the Cannon Fire Podcast.
I want to hear cannons. Outfield, pop ball to the five, touchdown Tampa Bay. Mike Evans does it again. Fire the cannons, Bucks.
It's first and goal. That's picked off. That's picked off. And who else? Rondé Barber. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers may ride to the Super Bowl with that one.
Third down, 18. Dropping Gannon, looking Gannon, looking Gannon. Throws up with it.
That's intercepted. That's 30. Derek Brooks, 30. Up to the 29. He's 20. Gone. Derek Brooks all the way. There it is. The dagger's in. We're going to win the Super Bowl.
And there the cannons go. Fire them. Keep on firing them.
Hello and welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new edition of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I'm your host, Rhett Matthew. Joined alongside me, my good buddy and co-host, from BucksNation.com, Evan Wanish. Shaking off the rust here. I don't know what happened on the intro there. It wasn't as smooth as it normally is, but, you know, got to adjust the microphone for dramatic effect. Evan, regardless of how long it's been since the last time we've done a show, I'm very happy to see you and very excited to dive into Tampa Bay Buccaneers mandatory OTAs this week.
Yeah, finally something actually football to talk about, right? I think it's been... and we were actually talking about this before the show. This is going to be, I believe, the last sort of football stuff, actual football stuff, before training camp. So kind of going to just go over it. And I mean, we're not going to be talking about, oh, this player was great and this player's winning this battle. It's more so who looks good in shorts, who doesn't. And then there's actually some storylines, some not as good as others, as we will get into. But yeah, there's actually been some storylines to chat about and stuff you probably wouldn't want to, because it's not necessarily quite about the team on the field. It's more so some stuff off the field and a distraction, I guess you could say. But there's also some stuff, you know, the Buccaneers made a signing this past week, and not just any signing, you know, like a signing of a guy who's like most people are going to recognize the name, you know? So, there is a good bit to talk about, especially for early June, right? And typically around this time, you don't get to talk about a ton. So we are very thankful for some news coming out.
Yeah, they call it the summer sabbatical. Basically, what the dead period is between the end of mandatory minicamp here, which we are in the middle of, and then the start of training camp. Because this week is really the last organized football activity the Bucs are going to have together until late July. So we're going to catch you up on everything you need to know. But as the title suggests, there is a lot of news happening with a player outside of training camp. And I say outside of training camp because he just hasn't shown up yet. No call, no show for the first 2 days of the 3-day camp. That is outside linebacker Randy Gregory, who is in the middle of a lawsuit with the NFL. So I guess, you know, you don't have to think too hard about why he may or may not be showing up. But yeah, former Broncos pass rusher Randy Gregory has filed a lawsuit against the NFL and the team claiming discrimination for being fined more than $500,000 in the past year plus for taking medications for disabilities that include THC. Now, Todd Bowles had spoken up and said that these are unexcused absences. I think the Bucks may or may not have been expecting him. Regardless of the lawsuit, it's going to go down. It's going to go down as an unexcused absence. And for Randy Gregory, a guy who hasn't even stepped onto the field yet for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he's looking at potentially over $100,000 in fines if he misses all 3 days of camp here.
Not the best impression. No, not the best first. I can think of better ways to make a first impression. It's like showing up to your girlfriend's parents' house and you just forget their names, right? You just the first time you're ever meeting them, or you just no show, right? That's basically what it is. First day on the job and a new job, and you just decide not to come. I don't think it has anything to do with the Buccaneers, really. I don't think it has anything to do with Todd Bowles or anything like that. I do think that the lawsuit has something to do with it. And look, I'm not a lawyer. You're not a lawyer. We're not legal experts in any sense. So we're not really going to talk about the details of a lawsuit per se, but he's technically suing the NFL. Like, so maybe he feels, and I think he's allowed to come to practice, or else it would be technically, it should be excused at least if he wasn't allowed. But since he's suing the league, I guess he sort of figures that it'd be best for him not to show up. And I mean, that's his decision, but at the same time, you're going to face the consequences. And I know a lot of people have said, cut him, right? Oh, do you have the disaster sign, One, they signed him to like a 1 year close to vet minimum deal. I think it's like $5 million or something. Not a ton of money. And two, I don't think the Buccaneers are going to cut him because I don't think they're probably not pleased, but because at the end of the day, it is an unexcused absence, but they're going to fine him and they'll pay the fine and that'll be that. If he doesn't show up to training camp, that we have more of an issue. Then you could be talking about, okay, what's this guy's future with the team? But at the same time, I do wonder how much of this whole lawsuit thing is playing into it. And it does suck that we can't really, because we don't know all the details of the lawsuit, right? We don't know all the fine print. So we can't really dive into why that would be the case or how that would be the case. But I do think, and this is, again, purely speculatory, but I do think the lawsuit has more to do with this. I don't think it's he's mad at the Buccaneers. He's mad at Todd Bowles. He hates his team. Whatever. He regrets signing. I don't think it's any of that. I just think it's the circumstances that he has himself in right now, and I think until that is resolved one way or another, I don't know if you're going to be seeing him much.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to prepare yourself, I guess, to some degree for what potentially may happen if he doesn't end up playing for the Bucks. I don't think it's going to get to that point, like you said. I think the Bucks end up hanging on to him one way or another, but you look at the depth along that defensive line, and especially at edge rusher, you've got second-year edge rusher Yaya Diaby, Randy Gregory, of course, there. Marquise Watt's going to be back, still on the roster. Antonio Greer Jr. as of right now, but K.J. Britt, J.J. Russell, V. Jones, and then the rookie as well, the edge rusher Braswell.
Chris Braswell, yeah.
Out of Alabama, who did get some high praise this week from Yaya Diaby. So, I mean, when you look at this edge rusher room, when you look at what the Bucks have on defensive line, we'll talk about some other spots on the defensive line here shortly, but how do you feel about the rest of this room if you take Gregory out of the equation?
Not great, because I was of the mindset, that's one of the reasons I praised the Gregory signing, right, was because I was of the mindset that they needed a veteran pass rusher, even if it wasn't a dynamic piece, right, a guy who's going to go get you 10 sacks. I didn't think they needed that, but I think they needed to add to that veteran in the room, and they did that. And if that veteran is all of a sudden not a part of the solution or this situation, then if I'm the Buccaneers, look, if you don't think he's going to play for you, I'd cut him and I'd sign another guy right now. Like, Yannick Ngakoue is still out there. I don't have the exact list in front of me, but there's still a couple guys that are available right now. And, we'll see what happens. Like we both said, don't think it'll get to that point. I do think Randy Gregory's going to play for the Buccaneers, but if he doesn't, how would have me feeling about the outside linebacker room? I mean, you would basically have, like you mentioned, Yaya Diaby, Chris Braswell, Anthony Nelson, Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, your main four. And then you got guys like Marquise Watson there to fill in for depth. But I don't know how to feel about that group, right? Jertrand Schwenk has been very underwhelming in his NFL career. Anthony Nelson is more of a rotational player. And, you know, Braswell's a rookie. Yaya Diaby's only a second-year player. Are we sure, you know, is he going to keep progressing? Is he going to stay the same? Is he going to regress? You know, it's very possible. So to me, it would be worrisome. Now, I'm not saying that if Randy Gregory's on the team, all is saved. No, I still have concerns. Even if Gregory is there, I have concerns about the outside linebacker room. But it would just be very much magnified if Randy Gregory would not be there.
Now, I know preseason overreactions tend to make characters out of these guys, but some guys who are still on the roster and I think have made headlines before, I'm looking at Marquise Watts in particular. JTS, you know, last year headed into the season, or even the year before, should have been in this conversation, but I feel like we know what to expect with a guy like him. But I look at Marquise Watts, and I guess even Braswell as a rookie. Do you expect a jump in development for any of these guys who have kind of stuck around? Because, again, I think Marquise Watts, J.J. Russell, another name, are these guys that could develop and maybe start to show up here more?
Yeah, J.J. Russell's a guy who's more of an inside linebacker. Marquise Watts is the name I think they've kind of maybe hoping, right, that he could be a guy who's a preseason standout, right, a guy who a lot of people are talking about. Yeah, you know, every year there's always – them couple of names where fans, you know, they see in the headlines, he has a few good practices and then maybe makes a play or two in a game. And Marquise Watts has been pretty good, right? The Buccaneers have held on to him for, I believe, two seasons now.
Jose Ramirez, another name on there.
Yeah,
I forgot him.
Yeah, he's, yeah. So, I mean, those two guys are more YOSO development guys. I think Marquise Watts is probably ahead of Jose Ramirez right now in terms of, you know, where the depth chart is and where the development is. So I do think if one of those guys would step up, I think it would be a pleasant surprise. I don't think it's something that the Bucs are counting on, but you never know. You really never know who's going to shine in these preseason games, who's going to pop out. But also, you know, preseason games are great. They give you a look. At the same time, though, you sort of take them with a grain of salt at times because you can see how many times we've seen a dude dominate in the preseason, and not just with the Buccaneers, but with the NFL in general, right? Seen a dude dominate in the preseason, and it just doesn't work out. You see it, and not just football. I mean, baseball. There's guys that hit freaking 400 in spring training, right? And then they make the roster, and then they hit 167, and they're sent down to AAA, right? So basically, it happens. I would just say, you know, the hype, right, and the excitement, I would say head with caution, basically. Just know in the back of your head, like, okay, if Marquise Watts is great, like, it'd be a pleasant surprise, you know, if he could contribute a good bit, or a bit more, I guess I could say, to the Buccaneers in 2024. And look, he may have to, right? If Randy Gregory's not involved, if there's an injury involved there, right, whether to Yaya Diaby or Jertrand Schwenk, Anthony Nelson, Chris Braswell, whoever it may be, all of a sudden, yeah, Marquise Watts might be playing a much bigger role than expected. So you are hoping that that dude can take another step, and a guy like maybe Jose Ramirez, who was a draft pick of theirs, can take another step as well. So we'll see how it goes, and I do think it'll be, you know, an important preseason. I think for one of those guys, because I think one of them is going to make the roster, and I'm not sure if the other one does.
Another guy making headlines along that defensive line is Vita Vea. Man, slim down quite a bit. I think he's still listed at 347 on the stat sheet there, but he is slimmed down, and part of that in due to some training camps in Portland, Oregon with former Buccaneers defensive tackle, Super Bowl champion, Ndamukong Suh. And I got to tell you, man, one of the biggest things I miss about having Suh in Tampa is just the interactions that we got to see on social media between Vita Vea and Suh. There was one time in particular, I think it was camp, they had designated carts, and they had the Suh-mobile, and it had one of those big head cutouts of Ndamukong Suh just slapped on the front of a golf cart. But I miss those two together. But some extra training sessions in for Vita Vea, coming in noticeably slimmer, but I have to think he's still going to be just as much of a monster as he has been these last couple of seasons for Tampa. What do you think of skinny Vita?
Don't love it.
No,
not gonna lie. Don't Don't love it. I don't look. I don't think it's going to make him a terrible football player. But I just, to me, you're going to be skinnier. Okay, like that's great. But like, how much more explosive is he going to be? Right? Like, was that a way to? Did you get skinnier to try and improve your pass rush skills? Did you try to get more explosive off the line? Your first step, you know. To me, I would much rather have Vita Vea just be the bulky guy that's going to take up multiple blockers. You're going to have to double team. I'm not saying he's not strong anymore, but it's something about having that, you know, that guy up the middle as big as he was, right? And I'm not saying he's miniature now, right? But he is significantly slimmed down. You can tell, right? Like, you can, if you just look at a picture of him, like Google, you know, OTA pictures from 2024. If you see one picture of him from the last 2 days, you're going to be able to tell, right? It's pretty obvious. And again, I'm not saying all of a sudden, you know, he's just going to be this weakling, right? But to me, I would much rather prefer the Vita Vea. That's just a big dude clogging up the middle and a guy you can't run on. Now, he may still be that guy. He may be better because of it. I'm not doubting that. It's just there is a little bit in the back of my head. Like, does he lose a little bit of that edge? Does he lose a little bit of that advantage that he had over a lot of linemen with his size and strength? Does that go away a little bit? But hey, if it goes away a little bit, but his like pressure production and his sack production increase a little bit, I probably would take that trade off.
Yeah, and 29 years old, you know, coming up on 30. I don't know if he's going to, I don't want to say that he's going to gain any speed, but at the other end of the right. spectrum, you do have to wonder if he is going to gain anything. Are we going to see more intensity? Are we going to see better pass rush skills? Because I think for a little while last season, he led the team in sacks.
Yeah, a little bit. I think he started off hot. Yeah. If I remember correctly, he started off hot, and then he sort of tailed off a little bit. But he's always been a okay pass rusher, right? But that's also wasn't what he was pre-draft. Like, it wasn't like this guy, oh, this guy's going to be, you know, like, that's not what they draft him to be. That's not what they signed an extension to be. Like, you know, so it's not his calling card, but it doesn't have to be. So if that can give him a little bit of a boost, sure. I just, in the back of my head, I am a little bit, not really concerned is even the word, but just like curious, I guess you could say. Like, how is this going to work out?
No, I completely understand, because you think about just how widely regarded he's been around the NFL as one of the better nose tackles in the NFL. His ability as a run stuffer, the Buccaneers run defense being what it is with him on the field these last couple of years, even though it's kind of gone up and down from where it was in 2019, 2020, he's still a force, and he is still, you know, a big part of that Buccaneers defensive line. But when you look at the contract, when you look at the accolades he has been given, it isn't because of his pass rush skills. Those are just kind of a plus. So it'll be interesting, especially when you look at what else the Bucs have at that position. You still got Greg Gaines coming back, I believe. Will Golston will be back in time for training camp. And then you've got Logan Hall, which, let me get your 2 cents on Logan Hall really quick, because I think I hate to say it, but I don't think expectations have ever been lower for Logan Hall in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a guy I'm not trying to dunk on a dude, but I didn't love the draft pick when they made it, right? It seemed like it was a project. It seemed like he wasn't going to be a finished project, if that, for a long time. And his first year, he didn't really play many snaps. You know, the Bucs still had, you know, sort of a lot of guys there. They're still trying to win with a lot of veterans and stuff like that. They signed, you know, Akeem Hicks and stuff to play that middle, and they had Vita Vea there and everything. But then, you know, his second year, they were hoping he'd make a little bit of a jump. And I don't think they were hoping that, that he was going to be the star player, but I think they were hoping to see a little bit more than they did last year out of Logan Hall. And yeah, I don't think he's in danger of getting cut. I do think it's sort of a make or break year to where, like, yeah, like, they could, And it sucks because they've kind of prioritized it anyway, but like they might have to make finding another interior guy a priority in the 2025 offseason should Logan Hall continue to not develop. And then you're talking about Logan Hall potentially not making the roster in 2025, you know, potentially being a cut candidate. So he's entering year three. He hasn't really shown you much. And at this point, I don't really want to say he is what he is because I don't like to judge players until after their third year. But, I mean, you got to show me something. And Logan Hall just hasn't shown me anything. So, I mean, you know, luckily the Bucks have Kalijah Kancey up there in the middle as well. Because if they didn't, you know, I think they'd be in real trouble with just Vita Vea.
Let's talk about the other side of the football here. And
this episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Some big news, a roster acquisition for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but this kind of reminds me of some of those signings the Bucs would make closer to camp in the Brady era, where it's just kind of like a name,
yeah.
And people
you're
get
like, oh, wow, okay.
Pumped. Yeah, I definitely didn't expect to see Sterling Shepard in a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform, the former New York Giants second round pick, but the Bucs signed him last week, made it official on Monday. It's a one-year deal, and drafted in 2016. I mean, expectations are seemingly all over the place with this guy. The big news is the reunion with Baker Mayfield. They were a 1-2 punch in that Oklahoma offense. You remember he had that huge game. I think it was like 200-plus yards against Baylor that one time in the rain. One of the best performances of Baker's college career, for sure. But I think you bring him into Tampa, you look at where they are, the departure of Devin Tompkins. We don't really have to get into that, but an injury designation for him. So he's gone. You got Trey Palmer still. You've got a couple of rookies on the roster as well. Where does Sterling Shepard fit in? Where are your expectations for him? Because I know that, you know, injuries have really been a problem for him these last couple of seasons. Hey. But whenever he is available and on the field, he hasn't done very much. Well, with all due respect, he was in New York with Daniel Jones as his quarterback. So when you look at the depth chart, one, is he going to make the roster? Because I definitely think he is. Chase Edmonds went on Twitter and said he's definitely going to make the roster. I know he doesn't make personnel decisions, but he might have insight into that. And what are your expectations? Do you think he could potentially come in here? And I don't know about a career resurgence, don't get me wrong, but could he be of good use to the Bucs at wide receiver 3, maybe 4?
Well, I know he's going to be the wide receiver 3. I would have to imagine that both Trey Palmer and Jalen McMillan will be ahead of him, especially Jalen McMillan. They invested the top 100 draft pick in him. So I don't think that you are right. He had success in New York last two seasons, though. You know, battled injuries a little bit, but just like you said, when he was on the field, it's not like he was lighting the world up, right? Over the last two seasons combined, he's had 23 catches for 211 yards. So, not exactly, and he's had two touchdowns, one touchdown each year. So not exactly great, but at the same time, look, there's a reason he was available in June, right? Like there was a reason that he was available at this point in the offseason. There always is, right? There's always a reason that these guys, these free agents are available at this point. There was a reason that, oh, you know, when you look at your phone one day and the Bucks signed Julio Jones, well, you know, maybe Julio Jones is cooked because they signed him 2 days before training camp. You know, like there's a reason, right? And I'm not saying Sterling Shepard is cooked, and the Bucks are trying to find that out, right? It's a very low risk move. It's for the veteran minimum. You can cut him if he sucks, like. But if it works out, you could have tremendous depth in your wide receiver room, right? I mean, you're talking about, you know, we talk about Mike Evans, Chris Godwin a lot, but I mean, you'd have a back half of Jalen McMillan, Trey Palmer, Sterling Shepard in no particular order there.
Rakeem Jarrett as well going to be in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, Jarrett could be there. You know, I do expect them to probably carry six wide receivers. So I think if they were to carry that number six, I think that'd be, probably be the six. I don't think that, yeah, he's in danger. I think he'd have to be pretty bad to be in danger of getting cut. Now, how much he plays in the regular season, that remains to be seen. I do think I compared it to kind of similar to the David Moore signing last season, where I think if Dave Canales would have stayed in Tampa Bay, I think they would have never signed Sterling Shepard, because I think they would have re-signed David Moore, to be honest with you. But David Moore, like, he played a little bit, but he didn't play a ton. And I think that's going to be a similar role that Shepard plays here, just being that veteran in a room. And look, I mean, yeah, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin are two veterans. They've been there, done that, one Super Bowl. But, you know, Trey Palmer and Jalen McMillan and even Rakeem Jarrett are really young players, right? So I don't think having more veteran talent in that room is a bad thing. And it did kind of catch me by surprise. I didn't expect them to add a wide receiver at this point in the offseason, but I do think, like I said, it's a very low risk thing. It's not going to kill him if it doesn't work out, right? If Sterling Shepard is just, look, like who he was the last 2 years in New York, that's who he is. Okay. Like, you still got four other dudes that, like, I think can be pretty good. So, it is not going to kill him if it doesn't work out. And I know there were some people on the video that we posted about it, like, oh, he, you know, he probably not even going to make the team, might not make the team. I do expect him to make the roster. Now what he does contribute in the regular season, that remains to be seen, but, I do think it's a win-win, right? Because, you know, for Sterling Shepard, he gets to reunite with Baker Mayfield. And for the Bucks, you get low-risk, cheap veteran depth. And, you know, that's fine to me.
At the end of the season, as we keep the discussion on the wide receiver room, at the end of 2024, which receiver do you think is going to have had the bigger impact on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Is it going to be Trey Palmer or Jalen McMillan?
McMillan. Yeah, I do think it's McMillan. I don't think McMillan's going to be given the wide receiver job, like wide receiver three job, right out of the gates. But I do think it's going to be one of those things where over time, for one, I do think McMillan's going to be, I think Palmer is too, but I think McMillan's going to be one of those guys in training camp that you'll see written about and being like, oh, wow, this dude is just making plays after play after play. Just like Palmer was last year as a rookie, right? I think McMillan's going to be very similar. And I do think as time goes on, as the season goes on, I think McMillan's going to get more opportunity. And look, they drafted him with a top 100 draft pick. Like, they clearly like him, you know, like they clearly have plans for him to be a contributor, right? For them. Like, Trey Palmer was a great draft pick. He was a sixth round pick, though, at the end of the day, right? Like, I'm not sure the Buccaneers, especially since they had Russell Gage at the time, right? And Russell Gage goes down and Trey Palmer all of a sudden has to play a much bigger role. But I don't think the Buccaneers intended for, you know, Trey Palmer to be, you know, as good as he was in his rookie season. That's great, right? That helps. But, you know, I also think that they have pretty high hopes for a guy like McMillan. So we'll see. I do think at the end of the day, though, even if McMillan gets off to a slower start, I do think it might be a little bit of an adjustment to the NFL. But I do think by the end of the day, you're going to look at it, you're going to say, by the end of the year, you're going to be okay. Like, he's the wide receiver three. And potentially, we've talked about this before, and I know it's not a slam dunk that this guy is going to not be in Tampa Bay, but potentially, you know, you're hoping to almost end this year thinking, okay, wide receiver three, sure, with but he has another year of development. Maybe he can be a wide receiver two on this team, which he may need to be, right? Yeah. If Chris Godwin departs. So, and having Trey Palmer as your wide receiver three and McMillan as your wide receiver two might not be a bad thing. So we will see what happens there. But I do think that by the end of the year, McMillan is going to be viewed as the guy that's like the wide receiver three. And Palmer's just going to be a pretty darn good wide receiver four, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. And I say that because I don't want to talk about ceilings, but when you talk about how the Bucs may potentially want to feature a McMillan on the field and Trey Palmer, let's be honest, after that playoff game against Detroit, I don't remember too many people headed into the offseason super pleased with him. So I think when you do look at this wide receiver room, it's going to be stiff because Trey Palmer is a very talented player. And I think early in the season, we're going to see some nice plays with him. Hopefully, the chemistry between him and Baker Mayfield gets that much better. And in this new offense, you know, you can start to find roles for these guys who have shown that they can make plays in the past. Raheem Jarrett, we talked about him as well. It'd be cool to see him catch a touchdown in week 7. You know what I mean? Like, just keeping things fresh enough to keep these guys in the rotation. But I agree about McMillan. Charles Jansen in chat agrees as well. He says early in the season, it's going to be Palmer. By the end of the season, it will be McMillan. Talking again about the rookie wide receiver, Jalen McMillan, the departure of Devin Tompkins left some questions about the return position, and it seems like McMillan might be the early favorite about camp body potentially returning kicks for the Bucs. Seemingly, Jordan Whitehead was out there returning kicks as well, maybe just for fun.
Well, there you go.
I hope just for fun, because I definitely
you're starting strong. I don't prefer my starting strong safety to be returning kicks, but
you know, I definitely hope that doesn't happen. But you think about McMillan at returner. Are there any other guys on the roster, not to put you on the spot, that could be candidates come training camp?
Yeah, I mean, I do think Jarrett could be a potential candidate there, and especially if he's going to stick, like that might be the way he sticks. You know, that might be the way. I don't think Sterling Shepard. I don't think he can do it. Maybe Bucky Irving. I mean, I do think they want to feature Bucky Irving in more of a running back role than a returner. So I don't know how often they put him out there, but I think he could do it. But I would say Jarrett, I think, especially if Jarrett is going to find a way to stay on the roster, I think it's going to be because he can at least be somewhat competent, right? They don't really have a dude on there that I look at. It's like, oh, he's a, you know, he's a threat, right? He's a weapon back there. Tompkins was okay. You know, he was decent, but I also think if you compare him to other teams, you know, the Bucs have been so poor at that for so long that Tompkins being average or maybe sometimes slightly above average was like a breath of fresh air, right? Because that position has been so poor for the Bucs for a long time. I mean, so they had, obviously, the Michael Spurlock thing was the first one. Have they had one since?
Michael Spurlock, DeSean Jackson against Pittsburgh got called back.
That was a punt return, not a kick return.
Oh, you're right.
They've had a few punt returns. I don't know if they've ever had a kick return. Now, I know also the kick thing has changed with the guys kicking the ball back of the end zone. It has changed, but I don't know if they have, right? Even in their history, they haven't had much of a weapon there.
Here's a name for you. I think Clifton Smith may have possibly been the last guy to do it. It was either Spurlock or Clifton Smith.
Okay.
Who were the last guy to do it.
Yeah, so they haven't really had Charles Jansen in the chat also says Clifton Smith as well. So it might be Clifton Smith. They haven't really had that guy, right? And I think if Jarrett can show you some flashes in camp, he might be the guy. But again, Bucky Irving, I do think, would be an option as well.
Hey, we talked about Vita Vea slimming down at the top of the show. Get him back there. Returning
kids. Yeah, why not?
All right, let's wrap.
He can break tackles, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough to bring him down, like the fridge. So, let's go ahead and wrap things up with the running back room really quickly. I'm glad you brought up Bucky Irving and the Bucs wanting to use him in more of a running back role. Maybe that's as the game goes on, you start to see him get in and get more snaps. I know early in the season, it's gonna be interesting to see how they try and fit him in. Because Rashad White, we've been talking about expectations this entire show, seemingly coming into this season with maybe the biggest workload he's had. I think the Bucs are kind of expecting him at this point to be a do-it-all back for most of the game.
You want to be honest? I don't know. Like, I kind of think they re-signed Chase Edmonds. They drafted Bucky Irving. I viewed last year as kind of them really putting the wagon on him, right? I think hitching their wagon to him.
It's important to mention, like, his genesis, you know, catching the football. He was one hell of a receiving threat out of the backfield for the Bucs last year. But when you talk about, you know, the challenge on the table for Liam Cohen to take this Buccaneers run offense and just make something out of it, because it's been towards the bottom of the league.
It was better last year, but that's not saying much, right?
Right, yeah.
Anything would have been better than what it was in 2022. So, yeah, I do think, you know, Rashad White, I think they're hoping, yeah, he can take another step. But also, I think they like Bucky Irving. I think they want to get Bucky Irving a little bit of a look there. And we will see what happens now. I know some people in the chat have already pointed this out. Like, yeah, the run offense could be better if, you know, with Graham Barton, you know, being a guy there at center, finally having a solution at center. You know, there still are questions at left guard, but if a guy like Sua Peta or Ben Bredesen takes that job, you know, and they're good enough, you know, yeah, the run blocking will naturally improve and the run game will naturally improve. Now, I do have, you know, some concerns about Rashad White's game is in terms of vision sometimes, in terms of burst, decision-making, just hitting the hole when he needs to. To me, sometimes he sort of is hesitant at times. He's a little bit too patient. But, you know, I do think Bucky Irving is a guy that can kind of be a little bit of a spark plug there. If you know, because there's some games where you can tell if Rashad White's feeling it, right? He's able to, you know, take the ball out of the backfield, you know, run it, but he's also able to catch the ball out of the backfield, you know, make something happen, make a man miss. But then there's days when you can tell he's just not really on, right? And hopefully on those days, you could have a guy like Bucky Irving in there to sort of take a little bit of the workload off of him and provide a little bit of a spark to the Bucs offense.
Yeah, and in this new offense as well, I hope there's some creativity in the run game. We've been begging. I mean, Canales was one hell of an offensive coordinator, but there were weeks, when you think about the first game against Philly, Monday Night Football. I mean,
they were down like 16, like 7 minutes left in the fourth, and are still running the ball.
I mean, they were in the red zone, and I think it was like 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2, maybe 2 to go, and we're running the football out of the shotgun. We did the same thing later on in the season against New Orleans. They were down 20 something points, and they're running tosses to the left.
Yeah.
And I think some creativity is going to go a long way. So I hope Cohen can bring that to the table with the offensive staff that he's helped assemble under Todd Bowles. And I hope we see something, because again, I think any improvement this year from last year is going to be huge. I think it might even spark a couple of overreactions simply because the Bucs run offense, despite Rashad White being a bit of a bright spot. I mean, it's just been god-awful these last couple of years. So you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere. And again, you know, you're just hoping it gets a little bit better. It's, you know, it wasn't great last year, but it was improved. And you're hoping, you know, I know it's tough because expectations with another new offensive coordinator, right? For the second year in a row, you're not really exactly sure what to expect out of the run game or out of the offense in general. But yeah, you are hoping it gets a little bit better. And that'll make life easier for not only the offensive coordinator, but, you know, also the quarterback, you know, the passing game in general, everybody. It's going to make life a lot easier if they're able to run the ball better. And you know what? We talk about the Buccaneers really struggling last year against the really elite quarterbacks, right? You know, I wouldn't call Jared Goff really elite, but hey, he diced them up two straight times, right? Every time they played him. You know, he did really well against them. And Josh Allen played pretty well against them. You know, you keep those guys off the field, you control the football, right? How you control the football, one way to do it is by having a better run game. And the Bucs are playing a lot of elite quarterbacks this coming season, okay? They have Patrick Mahomes, they got Lamar Jackson, they got Brock Purdy. Kirk Cousins isn't exactly elite to me, but he's still very good. They played Jared Goff again. Like, you know, they have a lot of dudes that are coming up on that schedule that are really good, right? Justin Herbert is another name that's going to come up. They have a lot of guys, right? They played Jalen Hurts again. There's a lot of guys, and I think one way to help, right, to help your defense out as well, right? We talk about, oh, how it's going to help the offense and open up this and that. I think it's going to help your defense also. So a better run game, I think. While it's not the end-all be-all, and I'm still of the mindset that, look, this is a passing league. If you can't pass the ball when you need to, you're not going to win, right? You still have to win, I think, by putting the ball in the air. You just paid Baker Mayfield a boatload of money. You're paying Mike Evans and Chris Godwin a boatload of money. Use them, right? But at the same time, it's definitely going to help by having that more established and more consistent run game.
Yeah, you just listed all those.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Guys, the Bucks are going to be facing this season. I want to ask you about Tampa's guy. Just got the contract, multi-year extension for quarterback Baker Mayfield. I feel like we've hardly talked about him this show, so we will wrap up with this. Your expectations for Baker. I mean, you just listed some of the opponents he's going to have to outduel, seemingly, and he stepped up at times for the Buccaneers last year, but you could tell there are still some things that Baker needs to work on as a former number one overall pick. What are your expectations after the contract extension and, you know, hopefully building a roster, an offense that's going to serve him better than the one last year?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because, again, we're entering another year with a new offensive coordinator, right? And you really wish that Dave Canales would have been able to stick around because I do think, you know, you could have more of an idea, right? The talent's there. We saw that. The issue has been in Baker Mayfield's career has been consistency, though, right? It's been consistency and injuries. He pretty much avoided the injury bug last year, got a little bit banged up here and there, but never missed a start. I know he missed a couple of plays in that Indy game, I believe. He got hurt on the quarterback sneak, but other than that, he played every snap. But the bigger issue has been consistency and putting together back-to-back good seasons. Last year, he was good. You know, this year, what's it going to be, right? And this year, I actually think there's more pressure on him this year than there was last year.
Yeah.
Last year, he was on a one-year deal for whatever, $4 million. If it didn't work, the Bucks were going to suck. They were going to pick high. They were going to pick a quarterback, and Baker Mayfield would have been out of there. And it would have been like, okay, you know, Baker Mayfield didn't work, is what it is. Now, if he's not good, he's got a big cap hit attached to him now. And yes, the Buccaneers could move on after year one, but they're probably stuck with him for a second year regardless, right? So I do believe there's more pressure on him now to actually be good because the expectations are going to be raised, right? Like, he got to the second round of the playoffs, the divisional round, right? One quarter away, right? You lost by one possession, I believe, in that divisional round game from going to the NFC title game. You made the Pro Bowl. I mean, the expectations are going to be raised. And I do think that you have to, I don't want to say really settle down expectations because to me, like, okay, your expectations, oh, you expect an NFC championship game. Not necessarily that, but individually wise, I think Baker Mayfield has to be a bit better than he was last year because, you know what, he's being paid like it now. So I do think, you know, does he have to be an elite quarterback? No, but I do think there were times last year where he was not very good. And there were times where, you know, he not necessarily single-handedly cost them a game, but there were times where if he played a little bit better, maybe they win, right? I think the Atlanta game in Tampa, the first Atlanta game, if he plays a little bit better, they probably win, you know? especially against a lot of the better teams that they played early in the year, right? When they were struggling to beat any team over 500. You know, that Detroit game with the creamsicles, right? Look, man, I know Jared Goff passed all over him. I know the defense wasn't great, but the defense kept holding Detroit to field goals, and that might have been one of Baker Mayfield's worst games. Not statistically wise, but he missed so many deep balls. He needs to be better. You know, you need to eliminate those types of games in year two because it is year two. And guess what? Now you're being paid a whole lot more money to do this. So expectations for him, I would say, honestly, it's tough, but I do think he's going to be relatively okay. I do think he's going to go out there and have a terrible season. Do I think he's going to improve on what he did last year? I don't know. I do think it could be a lot similar to what it was last year. You know, good but not great. And that's okay. At the end of the day, what do we talk about when he signed that deal? He's like the 17th highest paid quarterback or whatever, right? Pretty average, right? It's like right in the middle. Like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, you just hope at the end of the year, you don't have any questions about who your starter is in 2025. That's what you hope is, right? That your hope is that for the first round of the NFL draft, you're not wondering, oh, should they take a quarterback? You know, like that's what your hope has to be. That's definitively, you know, like, no, you know, you got Baker for at least another year. Let's see how that goes. That's what your hope has got to be. And we'll see what happens because consistency, like I said, has been a big issue with Baker in his career.
Yeah, I've said it before on this show, and I will say it one more time. I like Baker. I have hitched my wagon to Baker Mayfield as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback. I do believe that this team can have success with Baker Mayfield at quarterback. I think there's a lot of good that he put out on tape. He showed us. I mean, perfect passer rating on the road in Lambeau in December. You know, we're talking about that Green Bay game all year long, and oh, they're gonna have to go play in December, and it's gonna be cold. And yeah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, he tore him up, dude, and he followed it up.
Perfect pass rating.
Yeah, he followed it up the next week, played just as good against Jacksonville. I know they were a beat-up team, but they took advantage. They jumped on it, and that's exactly what you needed that offense to do that week. So, you know, there are times where he's got to get better, but I think when you look at the situation he's coming into, there's a lot that can be said about the consistency or the lack thereof that he has had. 8 head coaches in 6 seasons is insane for any player, especially a quarterback.
And even more offensive coordinators. So.
Yeah. A fine-tuned version of last year's offense. I know there's similarities, but it's a new offensive coordinator for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's a lot of things going for him, right? You would think the chemistry with the guys on the offense, his top 3-4 pass catchers,
that shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that to be an issue.
Yeah. Evans, Chris Godwin, Trey Palmer, even at the tight end position, Kate Otten really broke out a little bit second half of the
season. Rashad White, you relied on Rashad White a lot in the passing game.
Wide receiver 5 is Sterling Shepard. I mean, they haven't played together in a couple of years, but this is a guy that, you know, I have to believe
he knows.
During this sabbatical we're about to go on to until training camp, they'll probably be training together. I have to assume. They're boys, right? So I believe in Baker. I think he can play well. I think he can play well enough for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win the NFC South for another year in a row. I truly do. But we've talked a lot about the run game today. We've talked about a lot about the run blocking. I think a good run game is going to alleviate a lot of this pressure that we talk about on Baker Mayfield, because if this run game looks exactly like it did last year and the year before, he's going to have to consistently play like one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's going to have to throw the ball well, like you said.
Yeah, and it's like I talked about earlier with the run, and you know, it helps everybody, right? It really does. It not only helps the running backs, helps the offensive line, but it helps that quarterback. It helps play action. You know, and in a way, it helps the defense. So we will see. It's tough because, you know, the questions we're going to be asking ourselves right now and over the course of the next month and a half, 2 months, is stuff we're not going to have any answers for, right, until the season actually starts. So it is going to be tough because we don't know, right? Like, we don't know how the run game is going to look. We don't know how the exact offense is going to look, right? It's not even the same offensive coordinator. So we will see.
Got to quit hanging on to the ball too long, too. That's one more thing. Yeah. We got to be transparent.
I think some of that might just be him. You just might have to deal with it. It's like, you know, with like bowls with the timeouts. Like, you might just have to sort of deal with that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll see an offensive system that prioritizes him getting the football out a little bit quicker, but we just got to wait and see. this is about it. I think we're going to do a show here soon and talk to you guys, maybe take some phone calls as well as we recap mandatory OTAs for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But after this week, that's it. There is not going to be much football news between now and the end of July when training camp starts back up at Advent Health Training Center. But we will have some fresh content for you guys on the way. And with all of that being said, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the Cannon Fire Podcast. I want to say thank you to everybody hanging out in the live chat. Al Bundy, Charles Jansen, Sal319, anybody else that I may have missed. Brutal as Bucks also stopped by. Good to hear from you guys. Follow the show on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of those are Cannon Fire Podcast. Best place to go for updates on the show and, of course, Buccaneer news as it happens. Speaking of Bucks news as it happens, you can follow my co-host Evan on Instagram at Bucks_daily. You can also find him on Twitter at EvanNFL and check out his written work at BucksNation.com. You got anything in the hopper this week?
Going to be looking at, and actually it ties into the channel here. So we're going to be looking at breakout players for the Buccaneers for the season. Also probably going to be looking at training camp battles. I don't know exactly when that's going to be. But then we also have something where I'm going to work on a article for Bucs Nation that's going to be turned into a video on this channel. That's going to be pretty cool. So I don't want to reveal too much about that right this second. But in terms of on this channel, I know last year on James's channel, I did something called the positional previews, right, where I went through each position group and just kind of talk about what the Bucs have in that position, what they added in the offseason, what the expectations are for that group. And we're going to be doing that again here before training camp. I like to do it before the training camp or preseason. And luckily, I didn't start it yet because the wide receiver one would have been wrong because they added a pretty significant name there. So they will be up. So we're not going to have, you know, any really shortage of content. The Buccaneers actual football, there's not going to be much to talk about there, but we will have some content out for you guys over the next month and a half before training camp.
Yeah, I got some great stuff on the way. Last but not least, you can find myself on Instagram and Twitter at Redicus, R-H-E-T-T-A-K-U-S. If you follow me, I will follow you back. Thank you once again for hanging out with us. We will talk to you soon about more breaking news about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'm your host, Rhett Matthews, signing off from my co-host, Evan Wanish. We'll see you in the next one. Until then, and as always, thank you for listening, and go Bucks.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.